Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and a very warm welcome. This is the Motormouth podcast with myself, Harry Benjamin, and Tim Sylvie, where in each show we sit down with a figure from the world of motorsport and dive into how exactly they ended up where they are now. F1 champions, team principals, Formula E and touring car stars. If there's anyone with a story to tell, they'll usually tell it right here. Motormouth is an app and website where you can catch up with all the latest F1 gossip at motormouth.club and view live timings across a race weekend with our app. We're also proud to be partnered with the Brain Tumor Charity, helping to raise awareness and help find a cure through events like our annual karting race, where you can go head-to-head against professional drivers, all to raise vital funds. For more info, check out motormouthkartrace.com. This podcast is brought to you by F1 Experiences, the official experience, hospitality and travel program of Formula One. F1 Experiences is the closest you can get to the pinnacle of motorsport. And let's face it, any chance to get close to Formula One, we're all over it. Enjoy the very best race tickets and track hospitality, first class hotels and unprecedented access you simply cannot get anywhere else. For more information on how you can book your F1 experience, visit f1experiences.com, where you can also save 5% on your very own F1 Experiences package by using the code MM11F1E when checking out online. So, what are you waiting for? Experience the 2022 F1 season firsthand with exclusive access courtesy of F1 Experiences. Get booking today at f1experiences.com.
Hello, Tim Sylvie here. Now, today, before we crack on, I'd like to do a quick acknowledgement to our listeners. We've got over 100,000 of you now, and our next milestone will be 150 episodes, which is frankly insane. So thank you to everyone that's taken the time out of their day to listen to us over the last 18 months or so. Please keep the love coming, subscribe, share, and review us. It really makes a difference and means we can keep on bringing you the great and good from the motorsport community. So today's guest hails from Romford. And did you know, Harry, that Romford once staged a cheetah race event? Well, it tried. In 1937, the local authorities had the legendary idea to import the big cats from Kenya and race them at the Greyhound track. It never took off because they couldn't get the cheetahs to chase the rag and stick flying past them. Clearly smarter than your average greyhound. But Harry, I have a Romford-related quiz question for you.
Okay.
Which former Arsenal and England footballer, this is an easy one, was known as the Romford Pelé?
Why is that an easy one?
That everyone knows the answer to this.
Well, obviously I'm the only one that doesn't.
Yep.
I'm not good with my football.
Okay,
you know what's even worse is I was born in Leytonstone, which is just around the corner from Romford. Yeah. So, you know, it's shocking, really. Loads of footballers live around there. Was it someone who played for Arsenal by any chance as well?
Yep.
Is it, I don't know, like give me a chance. The Romford Pelé. I want to say Sol Campbell, but I don't think that's right.
10 points for effort there. You okay. worked out that it was an Arsenal player. Do you want one more guess or do you want me to
Because they all live around that way. Literally all the Arsenal players live around there.
Similar era. I don't know. Might even be the same era, actually.
What the... that's the only era of football I kind of half know. I don't know. The Romford Pele. Oh, no. I don't know.
It's Ray Parlour.
Oh, I wouldn't have got that.
Absolute legend. No, yeah.
Wouldn't have got that.
Footballer turned...
Sorry,
quite,
Ray.
Quite a funny commentator. Anyway, how are you? All right? Any news?
I've moved.
Yes.
I've flown the nest, finally, and I've got my first flat, which I'm very excited about. I've moved south of the river.
Oh, really?
In London.
Where are you?
As you know that. Greenwich. Well, yes, Greenwich. I'll keep it fairly generic, just in case. No stalkers out there, Tim. Come on. Yeah. And I've been useless with everything at the moment because I'm living amongst boxes and moving in across the. It's just been the Jubilee bank holiday in the UK, which is completely not me for six. 4 days off should not be allowed at all because literally I don't know where I am or who I am come the Monday afterwards. And when you're moving as well, it's an absolute nightmare. So I'm nearly up and running. But I am in my kitchen at the moment because the studio is still being constructed by me.
I like it. Lovely colour cabinets, by the way.
Thank you.
Anyway, enough of our ramblings. Shall I introduce today's guest?
I think so. Let's get on with it.
Today, we're joined by Tom McCluskey, or Tomo F1, as he's known to his fans. He's become one of the most popular Formula One YouTubers on the planet with 300,000 subscribers to his channel and growing rapidly. We're looking forward to hearing about his life, career, thoughts and opinions. Tomo, welcome to the Motormouth podcast.
It's good to be here, boys. It's been a long time coming, this one.
It really has.
And also, I wanted to ask you, Harry, have you tried the new Lizzie line yet? Because you're south of the river now.
No, I haven't.
That goes through there, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it does, but I need to find... my nearest station does not have it, so I need to find an excuse to go on it or just have a ride on it just for fun and see what it's like. I've heard great things.
I had my first go on it yesterday, and it was pretty... Well, Liverpool Street, you got to walk... Well far though, it's like long walk to actually get. So I do wonder if it's actually quicker to just jump on a central line if you're going from like Liverpool Street to Tottenham Court Road. But whatever, it smelled fresh. You know when something smells new, and it's got that kind of like bleach smell to it. It did kind of
yummy.
Does it have air conditioning?
It's all about the aircon.
It does. It does have aircon.
That's what
which was nice yesterday because it was boiling yesterday.
Yeah.
I was sweating my nut off, to be honest. But yeah, it's lovely to be on.
It's great talking about Lizzie Lyon. So, well, we were just talking about off air, you know, you and you've been moving here, there and everywhere. Where are you at the moment then? Where are you joining us from?
Well, yeah, so me and my soon-to-be wife, she won't be my wife when this podcast comes out, but it's close. It's a couple of days after the Canadian Grand Prix, we get married. We've bought a place and we're living in Chelmsford, which in Essex, and it's kind of like we've gone between Romford, like London, like we lived in Hackney, lived in Walthamstow for a bit, and then Chelmsford. We kind of over lockdown, we kind of rubber banded to and from. I've moved so many times. I'm just so happy to just have somewhere. I've got my own little kind of studio space that's still kind of got a long way to go. My sim rig's behind me, still not put together. Everything's still a bit of a mess, but. I mean, home ownership's a very different thing to like living in a nice flat where, you know, everything's kind of taken care of for you. But it's nice to be settled and Chelmsford's a lovely place to live. It's got a good high street. It's easy to get into London, like half an hour to Liverpool Street. I'm happy. I'm happy, boys.
No, that's good to
hear. Proper adult now.
Yeah.
I know, right? It's weird. I'm almost 30. I'll be 30 next year, which, I mean, I'm not quite ready for that, but there you go. We're accepting you.
Well, Harry's the baby in the room still. You're still 25?
25, yeah. Showbiz age 21, obviously, and that will maintain that for a few more years. But yeah, no, 25.
And you're one of the tallest people I've ever met, Harry.
Yes.
You are such a huge person.
I like his, on his Twitter, is it on your Twitter, it says something like taller than you think in person.
I put taller in person in like my bio just because since sort of meeting, you know, I've met a lot of new people in the last couple of years, but it's all been, you meet them initially through like Zoom because that's the day and age we're in now. And no one, you can't get a sense for how tall or not tall somebody is. So literally every time I then met somebody in person, they go, you're much taller than
Then
after a while.
For those listening and that haven't heard me go on about Harry's height before, what are you, 6'5"? And the thing that really makes me chuckle every time is that he's got size 16 feet, which is just outrageous.
16? Do you, if you go like skiing, do you even need to bother with the hiring? You can just get some
I just need my boots and then I'm good to go, really. I had to buy some boots some years ago because I did go skiing fairly regularly, but it was
Must be a pain if you're buying kind of shoes, like genuinely. Like,
yeah, it used to be. Nightmare. I remember being 16 years old and having size 16 feet. They haven't grown since then. And it was back then, it was a nightmare because you just they didn't exist. Now it's a lot. The only shoe company that did relatively good ones was Converse, but because they're kind of long and narrow, they look a bit like, when they're that big, they look a bit like clown shoes and they're not supportive at all. So then now, thankfully, the world has listened and there's a few more options out there, but it's still a nightmare. You've got to buy them from America or whatever.
Are you a really fast swimmer?
I mean, I can be fast.
I think if you chat, you know, like Michael Phelps is like freakishly built for swimming. Mm. I think, you know, he's got really long arms and I think he's got like, his proportions are perfect for that kind of, so maybe there is a skill that you've not even like dabbled in before that you're proportionally built perfect.
I should probably do a bit more basketball, really. That's always the one that everyone says. True. I should probably do a bit more basketball. Anyway, but that's enough about me. thanks for coming to my podcast. Now, first of all, actually, I want to clarify. Obviously, on your brand is Tomo, right?
Correct.
But are you in this context in everyday life? Are you Tomo? Are you Tom? What do you prefer?
I mean, I go by so Tomo comes from university. So it's interesting. I've got like growing up, my parents and my kind of aunts and uncles and my kind of older family would always call me Thomas. And even now, if my mum doesn't call me like. If she doesn't call me Thomas, I find that really weird. But then all of my like home friends and most people know me as Tom. But then when I went to university, basically the group that I was in, everyone moved in on either a Saturday or a Sunday. And I moved in on the Sunday and there was another Tom who moved in on the Saturday. So he kind of dibs the name Tom. And I went to Bournemouth and all these lot were from like Cornwall. So I was really exotic and Essex to them. So they just decided to, they just decided to start calling me Tomo and I'd never gone by that before. And then that was just kind of my name at university to my university friends. And then, when I obviously the YouTube thing kind of kicked off, well, my past in doing football content, I used to be Sporting Tomo. That was kind of Sporting Lisbon. Mm-hmm. That was kind of the idea with that brand to use the word Tomo because it's a bit more ownable than Tom, I suppose. So, that's the story of Tomo, where that comes from.
Well, you did start in other sports, and football was your first YouTube exploration. So when did it turn from football to racing? When did Formula One come on the radar?
So I guess it was a combination of factors. So when I went away to university, that was the time. So I was there from 2011 to 2015, and that was the kind of time where I'd kind of fallen away from F1 a bit. And my focus was more on football. And then when I came back from uni, I had a season ticket at West Ham and just go over there a lot. And that was kind of front and centre. And then obviously we had our stadium move to the Fishbowl that is the London Stadium. And I'll be honest, it was a multitude of factors. There was, I don't know if you know, but there was a lot of issues with the ownership at the time as well. There were a lot of protests. You had the fans running on there was some fan who ran on and put the corner flag in the middle of the pitch. And there was like 10,000 people screaming. Like I was there for all these horrible games and it was really toxic at the time. And things are amazing right now in terms of results at the club. And there's still a lot of kind of resentment there. And in terms of the ownership, I just kind of lost that when we moved away from Upton Park, I lost that same connection, I think, to the club that I used to have. And I'd always been into, I did motorsport engineering at college. I thought I wanted to be a, pit crew. That was my plan, when I was like 16, 17. And I just kind of started. I'd always been obviously keeping an eye on the F1. And I think like 2016, 17, I really started to get back into it again. And then it came to the point where actually I was like, I mean, there's so many factors that, I mean, I guess this is a podcast, so I've got time to get into it, but there's so many different things that had to come together and decisions that I made because there was one stage where I'd given up on the channel completely. And if it wasn't for my first video that really kicked off, and me checking my emails and just happening to see a spike in views, I probably never would have come back to it. There are so many factors that, you know, I was essentially either football or design or F1. I had kind of three channels almost, like, and I wasn't sure what to do. And it was only because my first video, F1 video, really started to kick off my Rich Energy Red Bull one. If it wasn't for that, I probably would never have carried on with it, and it had just been some dead channel, and, you know, Audas would have been bigger than me. Which
can't have that.
Would have been a damn shame. Can't have that at all.
And what, it's, oh, go on, Tim.
I was just going to say, what is it about that video that spiked? Because, you know, we're terrible. We're crap with our YouTube. At some point, we'll get our heads into it properly. But we've done a few videos, nothing on your level, but we put bits and pieces on there. And one or two of the videos have just, for no apparent reason, just taken off. And not to your numbers, but for us, it was, you know, like Harry did one on, was it K-Mag? That got like 10,000 views in a very, very short space of time. And we only have like 200 or 300 subscribers because we just don't use YouTube. So for us, that was like, what the hell? What's going on with that? When we're, you know, usually we release something and it'll get a few hundred views because, you know, again, we don't do it. But there was no sort of rhyme or reason to it. How do you work out what works?
Yeah, because, I mean, it's easy to look at my channel now and the numbers I've got now, but it was the same for me at the time. You know, I think that video, you know, it wasn't even like my idea of this video spiking was that it had gotten 1,000 views, and where everything else was in like 2-digit numbers, you know, that was a huge spike. I mean, I uploaded football stuff for, you know, my first ever YouTube upload was in 2015, and it was Rocket League. and then I got into football. That was the first kind of like directly uploading it from my PlayStation. But I'd uploaded, for like 3-4 years. And I mean, I'd gotten like 400 subscribers on my channel. So I was well-versed in terms of YouTube, but I still didn't really like, I don't know. It's difficult now because I feel like I understand the platform so much now because I love YouTube. Like, I don't just, when I'm not making YouTube videos, I'm watching YouTube. Like, I love it. Like, I've always been super, and I think that's why I found it quite easy to network and connect with other creators because I'm always watching their stuff. And yeah, I think it's hard now to look at where that moment was, but I guess for that video specifically, I don't know. I guess at the time that was the Rich Energy conversation was relevant because they were still in the sport and there was so much mystery around it and it was something a bit different. I mean, like the production value was absolute cack. Like looking back at it now, maybe I should remake that one. But the Bad Santa's always talking about potentially coming back in here, but it's all just marketing. We're just feeding into his algorithm.
Yeah.
And I still don't know. Like, again, exactly the same with your guys' video. Like, it just kind of took off out of nowhere. I do actually have a theory, which I think makes the most sense, which is that Josh Revel, the Kiwi creator, who's getting a bit far away from me now. Me and him were pretty close on subscribers for a while, but he's picked up some momentum. He's flying. And we both kind of grew at a very similar time. And he did his 1,000 subscriber Q&A, in which he got some Rich Energy. And the dates seemed to coincide with that video. My video had already been out for like a few months. Mm. And then he released that. And then like from that date, the views started to go up. So something about that must have caught the algorithm and then fed that. So honestly, like, really, well, that's nothing but blind luck, to be honest. I mean, you've got, because loads of people make great videos, right? You can make a great video. Making a great video is fine. Getting people to watch it, that's the real challenge. That's the real skill, getting people to click through onto it and actually watch it through. And that's where, you know, it was blind luck that started to get recommended to people, but also it was a good enough video to hold people and get those views up, you know what I mean? So yeah, it's a challenge, boys.
It really is a challenge, isn't it? You say the word algorithm is such a key word. And one of my, I've struggled to understand YouTube. Maybe it's because, oddly enough, I don't watch a lot of it. I watch motorsport content, but or if I need to figure out how to do something and I need a how-to video, I watch that. But I'm an old school. Well, I watch the television, even though my mates, you know, watch YouTube as their TV, which I just can't quite understand. I don't know why that is. But one of my, I know, coincidentally, a lot of YouTubers, obviously yourself, but one of my friends is a guy called Max Fosh, who is massive on YouTube.
He's killing it at the minute, isn't
he? He is. And when I met him, hadn't really took off. He had a couple of viral hits, and his main hits were standing outside nightclubs interviewing people when they were drunk. And he was desperately trying to, like, you know, and he got on Lad Bible and stuff like that, and he was trying to improve. And then suddenly now he's getting, you know, a million hits on a video, and he's rocketing. He's doing these bizarre videos. In fact, he did an F1 one where he flew out to Miami to meet one of the creators of YouTube. What an amazing idea for a start. So he's got the ideas, but he was saying to me, I was like, what is it? Like, how do you do it? And he's like, it's not just about, as you say, the actual content of the video or the quality. It's about posting it at the right time, but also all these things that you don't think about, like having a really good thumbnail that's going to like catch people's eye and like sit well. And people, you know, I've redesigned thumbnails from ages ago, and suddenly, you know, I've got spikes in views from old videos. And I'm like, there's so much to think about, isn't there, as a YouTube content creator, that you wouldn't necessarily actually think straight away, I'll just make a video, talk to a camera and post it on there. Why is it not doing so well? There's so much around it that feeds the beast in a way. Do you feel it's a bit of a beast that you have to maintain or
for sure, for sure. I think as well with different creators. So I'm very grateful actually that I've got my channel to a stage where I can upload once a week and I can spend a good amount of time, because, you know, I do everything myself. I do all my edits. I do all my thumbnails. I'm completely kind of self-managing, in terms of my stuff. And I did briefly actually have an editor help me out, but to be honest, like my background is graphic design, and, you know, I'm very fiddly. For me to get an editor, I need someone who's better than me and can take my stuff further, rather than someone who just kind of, because I'm just too it's my baby, you know what I mean? I want it to be in. Because that's the beauty of this job, is that, you know, I've got that freedom and I don't feel that I'm too... Because I know with some guys, like, who upload, you know, every day, for example, like, that is... Because... And the thing is, as my understanding anyway, is that once you kind of condition not just the audience to expect daily uploads, but you condition the algorithm to expect daily uploads. Mm. When you don't do that, it really hits you.
Yeah, it falls off a cliff. There's people like Shmi and Sam Through Glass, had on the show. Shmi produces videos, I think, pretty much every day and has done for years. Yeah. And he's got a huge audience. But like you say, the moment you stop, you're in trouble. But it's also a brutal world, isn't it? I saw the other day on Twitter, there was an F1 content creator. I can't remember who it was. I'll have to have another look back. Who does these great thumbnails, really good video, gets loads and loads of views. And then there's this other channel which almost copies his thumbnail, copies his titles, just rewords them. And he's getting great traction because he's just ripping off this guy's content. They've publicly had this sort of spat, like, he's at it again. But what do you do? I mean, it's a dog eat dog world, isn't it?
I've noticed a few of these channels cropping up. Actually, they're incredibly clickbaity titles. Mm. Like, you know, it'd be like a picture of Lewis Hamilton and like Lewis hates Max, and it'll be like in quotation marks. And it's and then you click on the video, and I try not to click on these. I try, like, whenever I see them, because I know what they're bots, and you can tell it's because, yeah, they're so sophisticated now. You can upload a script and get a voiceover done automatically through a bot, and it sounds pretty legit. And it's just shit. Yeah. Like that. They just, it's such terrible, like, it's not all it's going for. But these videos are getting like six-figure views they've got a really compelling title and a really compelling thumbnail. And look, that's prime clickbait. And there's always that kind of balance of, you know, you've got to, people say about, and I don't think I get too much criticism in terms of clickbait, but there's a balancing act, right? You have to effectively mark, you've spent all this time on a video, the thumbnail and the title is the marketing. That's what's going to get people into the door. And you have to package it in such a way that you know, people want to see it and are interested and are compelled, but not in such a way that you're misleading and showcasing something. So that's why a lot of time you'll be like asking a question and not necessarily giving an answer. And I try and kind of keep the conversation quite open with my stuff. I'm not too keen to be like telling people what to think or what to say. But yeah, I mean, that is the balancing act of YouTube. And you know, sometimes you have to kind of, the dark arts are a bit necessary to get people through the door, because it's one of them, isn't it? Because so many other channels are doing it and are clickbaiting so aggressively. It is kind of a competition because there's only so many impressions. Like if you go on your YouTube homepage, like there's only so many videos it can show up. And yeah, if you want to make a job of this and be successful, then you have to make sure that you're on the homepages, because that's how you convert most of your views.
Yeah, of course. And actually, one of your, in fact, I think it's your most popular video is the Lando Norris one. And this is 2 years ago, so I forgive the title. Mm-hmm. Is Lando Norris another rich pay driver? Which is at that point in time, pre-F1. Well, was it pre-F1? When did he join F1?
It was his his first season was 2019, wasn't it?
Okay, so he was already in.
Yeah.
But at that point, he was relatively unproven. But my point with that is, where do you stand on Lando Norris now? I mean, I would assume you don't think he's just another pay driver.
Oh, of course not. No. But and again, that is the, because, you know, with that video, for example, like within the first minute, I outlined the fact that there had been a conversation. Because I am aware, and I've heard of, you know, how the amount of track time Lando would get, and, you know, compared to certain other drivers, and the opportunities that he would get because of his, you know, because of his
dad's success, minted. I suppose.
Exactly, like his dad is minted, and that's the thing. It's one of them that, you know, it's a conversation that I'd seen taking place, and I was like, okay, that's interesting. So let's actually dive into this a bit deeper. Mm. And the outcome is that, yes, Lando was afforded opportunities that lots of other young drivers wouldn't be afforded because of the, you know, his dad's a multimillionaire. But also he, like many drivers, like Michael Schumacher, well, he got paid for that Jordan seat by Mercedes. Like, you know, he actually took that opportunity and he's showcasing now that he's firmly there on merit. Doesn't mean he didn't get privilege and opportunity that other drivers didn't get, though. Yeah. And I think that's kind of an important, and I think that's an adult conversation to have. Mm. You know what I mean? So for something like that, to be honest, there have been other videos. There's been videos that I've actually, what was my most successful video was one that I did super early. And it was, what was it even about? I think it was about Latifi, and it was just kind of a breakdown of like who he is, like where he's come from,
yeah,
where his money's come from, and all that's in terms of the Safina support and all that.
Yes.
And that was one of those videos where actually like I did private it, because I was just like, actually I just felt I was a bit mean for no reason. You know what I mean?
Really?
Like yeah. And that was one where it was my most viewed video and I wasn't proud of it.
Right.
And I was just like, this is a bit rubbish. And it was, funny enough, it was the one video on my entire channel where my face is never in it, yet it gets the most views.
What does that hell, say? Right?
Come on.
That's got to tell
really,
you something.
Is it that bad?
Get that face off my screen.
A quick interruption to the show to remind you to check out our sponsor, F1 Experiences. F1 Experiences offer a wide range of packages that come direct from Formula One, giving you a unique experience of the pinnacle of motorsports. Official ticket packages come with the very best race tickets, first-class hotels and transfers, and unprecedented access, including track tours, pit lane walks, VIP hospitality, and loads more. It really is the closest you can get to Formula One. And Motormouth listeners can save 5% on your next F1 Experiences package by using the code MM11F1E when booking online at F1Experiences.com.
But Niki Latifi's a funny one. I mean, we had him on the show recently, and both Harry and I commented immediately after we stopped pressing record of what a lovely
young chap.
What a nice guy. Like, seriously, seriously nice bloke. And I've actually met his dad. I've had a meeting with his dad, and obviously there's the Safina connection, and his mum and dad are very independently wealthy.
But to this stage, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Safina, for bringing you this podcast.
That's a really good idea. Why haven't
you got some of their food product here? Yeah. Yeah.
but thoroughly nice family, and yes, he is there because of his money. But equally, you've still got to be a bloody good racing driver to set foot in an F1 car.
We still finished second in F2, didn't he? Yeah. Like,
yeah, but on like the fourth time of trying. But, the thing is, automatically, no wonder that video's done so well and will continue, I imagine, to pick up visas because you're hitting all the right turns and targets. And that's such a already it's getting my blood boiling because I want to have an argument that every driver is a pay driver in some form or another. You don't get to Formula One without money.
Of course,
but automatically that sparks an argument and a debate, which is exactly what you want for a video, isn't it? You want to get people popping off in the comments and talking about.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
In talking about it and watching it and discussing it and sharing it. So, you know, A star for that one. But I imagine you're full-time YouTube now, right?
Correct, yeah. So for about a year and a half, I'd say.
Well, firstly, congratulations. Yeah. That's amazing. Mega. Secondly, what's the plan? Is there a plan? You know, do you keep going on or do you want to use it to leverage opportunities in other areas in motorsport or completely different areas? Where do you see it going?
Yeah, I mean, I've never been one to just broadly in life, you know, I think it's good to an extent to have plans and goals, but I do also think that too many people get maybe bogged down in you know, following a certain path and not just, I've always been one to kind of go with the flow and, you know, the channel taking off in the first place was a prime example of that. Again, there was so many factors that, you know, the fact that, you know, we went into lockdown and I got furloughed from my job and then I was able to focus on the channel full time and then ride some momentum and build that up. So, you know, I'm not one to think too far into the future. I think obviously, you know, since that subscriber number became like six figures, the opportunities have kind of started to step up now, which is cool. But I'm not, you know, also I feel like, yeah, I'm 29 now. I have, you know, I've got a family. I want to kind of, it's all balancing act. You know, it would be very different if I was sat here, you know, as a single 21-year-old with no, like, I'd be going to races. I'd be jumping on every opportunity. But I think with where I am in my life now, like, I'm just happy to carry on riding the wave. I am confident that, you know, there's other things I want to do in terms of, like, I've always wanted to do like a clothing line. And I don't think of that so much as merchandise as a standalone. Kind of what what's his name? There's one of the Sidemen lot who does No Two Ways, which is like a shoe brand. I think a lot more like YouTube merch. I think it's better to sell it as a standalone brand that isn't relying on being a fan. Like, I'm not going to be selling t-shirts with Tomo on it. No, it would be a separate brand and entity, but that would tie in with my audience. Like, I'd love to do that. That's something I've had designs in the works for, like, literally years for that. And it's just about the right time. I think, you know, I'm very, you know, there's a lot going on at the minute. Like I said before, you know, we've just moving and getting married. So I've never been too concerned with, like, rigidly setting goals. And honestly, I back myself to do what I feel was right at the time, but also I started up a little business when I was at uni. I've never been afraid to try stuff, which I think is a super, like, a value I'm very grateful for having, because I know so many people that, like, they, and it's been nice because I know, like, a few people, one of my best mates, Sam, you know, he started a podcast because he was like, something he's always wanted to do, and then seeing my success and my own kind of, you know, encouraged him to do something himself and actually execute on an idea. Yeah. Because I think that's the key thing. Like, you've got to give something a go, and I'm prepared to try stuff And if it cocks up, well,
so what? I mean, if it cocks up, it doesn't matter. But I think that's a very non
learning.
It's learning, but it's a very un-British attitude that, because I think people in the UK, we're a pessimistic bunch, and
we are,
and people get envious very quickly. And it's my 2-year-old daughter's just strolled in. Do you want the podcast?
Tomo
F1. You don't know?
Hello.
No?
And don't forget to like and subscribe. But
yeah. every viewer helps.
Well, that's up.
But it's this country is very pessimistic about those sort of opportunities. And I think people get very envious about people who try, and they like to see people fail, which is funny. I've talked about this before, but in the States, so different. If you try and fail, or if you try and go bankrupt, it's like a badge of honor. It's like, well done. Good for you for sticking your neck out and giving something a go, even though you failed. And like you say, you learn from your failures. But there, as you've grown, the opportunities have come about, and it must be nice to get these opportunities. I mean, we saw you in Miami, and you know, incredible experience that was. We had you come to one of our parties with one of the brands that I work with, Hilton.
The decks.
It was the most random evening. So
weird.
But this is a sign of Tom's growth, because I said to Hilton, who I was working with out there, on behalf of Right Formula, to say, they were like, you know, what influencers can we bring? I went, Tomo F1. They were like, yes, we want him at our party. You know, they knew who he was and they wanted him there. And we had this party and we had Paris Hilton on the decks. We had Serena Williams there. Jenny Gow was there interviewing Daniel Ricciardo.
Was Serena? I didn't even see Serena.
Serena
was
there.
Mad.
Yeah. It, absolutely insane. But these opportunities must be a lot of fun to exploit.
Yeah, like to be honest, I kind of, you know, it's one of them where I do feel a bit, I feel a bit of a, because I've never like had opportunities like that before and been to that, any kind of nice, fancy. Like, I'm just a guy from Romford who makes videos in his bedroom about F1, like that. There is that kind of that's going to take some kind of getting used to. But yeah, it's cool. It kind of validates, you know, that what I'm doing is, and look, I'm under no illusion that, you know, I've got people who support me, and I wouldn't be here without the people who support me, and I've got people who don't like what I'm doing, and that's fine. Like, everyone's got an opinion on everyone. You know, everyone's got an opinion on the F1 drivers, the commentators, the media, the YouTubers who talk about it all. And, you know, I just think that I'm grateful for those opportunities. You know, at the same time, I'm not kind of, you know, for example, like going to races, like I'm up for going to races, but I'm not like, I've been to Silverstone, I've been to Miami, like there's a few races in Europe I'd like to go to. But, you know, for me, it's all about, you know, I love the sport. I love watching the sport and consuming the sport. And I love kind of making videos. And because I love just talking about it, having a conversation. I think maybe, you know, growing up, I didn't really have any, none of my mates were really big into F1 and motorsport as a kid. That was kind of always my, always my own little kind of thing on the side. Like, you know, when people say, oh yeah, my uncle or my aunt or my dad or my, or whatever got me into F1 as a kid. Like, no, none of my family were remotely interested in motorsport. This was always my, which, and again, the fact that I studied motorsport engineering at college, ended up going down a design route because I knew that wasn't for me, but I've kind of come full circle. And I'm like, yeah, I was always, that's what tells me that I know that this is something I absolutely love. And like my love of the sport, because, you know, some people talk about how, you know, when you turn a hobby into a job, you don't enjoy it as much.
Yeah.
I love it more than ever, man, because there's just there's clearly just something in me that just absolutely adores motorsport. And again, not just F1. You know, I did a bloody Indy 500 watch along at McLaren. Like, that was sick. Like, I've been to the MTC like twice now, and I was doing a live stream on there. Like, it's sick. It's like, it's cool to get these opportunities, and I'm just grateful. But also, I guess as well, once you actually get into these, meet these people and go to these parties, you just realize that, yeah, we're all just people.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's just doing their thing. And like, no one's really that special. Like, we've all got, you know, that little thing. Like, these drivers have got this little thing that just makes them stand out. In 99% of other aspects of their life, they're just normal people, but they've just got this one thing. And for me, I've got my YouTube channel, but otherwise I'm just a normal guy. And I never want to come across as anything other than that, because, you know, that's what I'm... I've got myself to a position now where, because, you know, I could chase the money, I could chase the bag, and I could earn a lot more than I'm earning now by taking all these opportunities. And I'm just like, no, I'd rather have the freedom and flexibility and just, you know, do what I love doing, which is just talking about the sport. And I see no reason why that should end anytime soon. I mean, I'm still just about in my 20s, and who knows how long I can carry on doing this for. But I mean, Brundle's pretty old, so.
You have such a good outlook on it, actually. And it's actually nice to hear, because I would think I was similar. I didn't have any motorsport family or anybody interested in it. So, and then I didn't even like sport that much. That's when I knew, I was like, if I'm into motorsport, you're really into it. And then it does become a little bit all consuming, doesn't it? Formula One today, though, let's talk about that. And you obviously watch a lot of Formula One. What have you made of the season so far?
Yeah, I think it's in terms of how it's done relative to my expectations. I think it's been pretty much on my expectations. I think obviously all the talk of these cars being able to pass more, blah blah blah. Like I think we've seen that slightly, and we've had these moments where they have been able to follow, and we've seen battles we wouldn't have typically seen in the past. But all in all, I'd say it's kind of met expectations, and I expected kind of Ferrari to be up there in the fight. With Red Bull, I don't think anyone expected Mercedes to be as far off as they have been, even now, to be honest. Like, yes, Mercedes have kind of turned a corner and moved forward, but they're still, compared to the Mercedes we know, and so many fans, so many fans like only know Mercedes as being the team succeeding at the top. Mm. And, you know, I can easily remember a time when that wasn't the case, but it's, you know, when you've got so used to what 8 constructors titles on the bounce, like that's been probably the biggest surprise. And it's a shame to see kind of Williams still at the back. I'm kind of a bit disappointed there. But all in all, yeah, I'd say it's met my expectations. Because I think with so much, like I'm sure we'll talk about like Drive to Survive at some point as well. Like so many of these things, it's about what are you expecting versus what you actually see. Mm. And I think I've always tried to keep my expectations quite measured, you know, not being too swayed by like recency bias and all that. Because, you know, I think last year was a fantastic Formula One season. Like 2021 and 2020 was really good as well, all things considered. But yeah, I mean, also I know about the dull seasons. I've been there through the boring, easy domination ones, and I'm enjoying it, boys. Yeah. I'm enjoying it.
And it, you're right, it is a shame to see Williams still at the back, because it sort of felt like they were making progress and it's not really ticking. It's a real pity. And I know you're an Albon fan, I know this, but question for you, if you were a team boss and you could have your pick of the drivers, the current crop or previous, who would be your two drivers?
Oh, wait, so when you say current crop or previous, do you mean like any generation?
Any generation. You go back as far as you want.
Ah, okay. I'd definitely have Jim Clark then. I think that's such a tragedy his career was cut so short, because I think he would have been way more successful, and he was already incredibly successful. So I think Jimmy Clark's one of those that, you know, pivotal, you know, drivers that, he was the first, obviously you've got, Fangio, we'd always talk about Clark as being the next best thing. So I think Jimmy Clark doesn't get the, you know, it's hard to say, because obviously, he was racing in the bloody 50s and 60s. So you can't really give the eye test, but I think Jim Clark, and then I would say probably, someone more recent. Honestly, in terms of, if I wanted to maximise performance, I would go for Clark and Hamilton, prime Hamilton, which, I mean, what is prime Hamilton? Who knows? Hard to say, 2019 maybe? I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think we asked that question a couple of times before. I don't think anybody's come up with Jim Clark. So that's a unique answer and very, very good one as well.
It's like that sort of Mike Hawthorn type, you know, those drivers who were absolute legends back in the day, but people don't really talk about anymore. There's some brilliant documentaries about Hawthorn, incidentally. He was a fantastic driver. But no, solid choices. And the Hamilton thing is interesting because he's obviously getting... It's a difficult one. George Russell is a fantastic driver, but how much of it is George Russell being a fantastic driver and just outperforming Lewis? And how much of it is about Lewis just hasn't quite got to grips with his car yet? And when he does, is he going to overtake George Russell?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think when we actually look at the performances, the race pace, the qualifying pace, there's been very, very little in it. I think George has been... Lewis has been more unlucky for sure in terms of, you know, you look at the safety cars and George profiting from that in kind of Miami. And I don't think there's much in it. And it was always going to be... It was always going to be difficult to rate how George would do, right? Because he'd only raced against Latifi. And in the same way, you know, it's always going to be difficult to really, you know, rate Latifi because he'd only raced against George. And, yeah, of course, George and Kubica as well. But obviously the Robert that came back, unfortunately, yeah. Was never going to be... Because Prime, I mean, I think if Kubica doesn't have that accident, he's probably got a world championship. Oh, and if BMW don't bottle it as well, they're pulling out resources, which
yeah.
is yeah. absolutely gutting. And yeah, look, I just think that George is fantastic. Like, you look at his junior career, and you look at, you know, how many points he dunked on the top of Lando Norris in F2, and you look at how Lando's doing at the minute as well. Like, these are incredibly talented drivers. And I think the gaps between, you know, in terms of the actual pace gaps between your Leclerc's, Verstappen's, Hamilton's, Norris, Russell, I think you can add to that conversation now for sure, is marginal. It is very, very marginal in terms of pace. You know, experience. Now, George has got a good amount of experience. He knows what it's like to, this is the thing as well, he knows what it's like to struggle with a team and have to, you know, work with the team to when the going gets tough and push. And don't get me wrong, like, Lewis has had bad cars in his career, but I think that, you know, I'm reluctant because I just think George is that good. You know what I mean? I always suspected it, but I could never say for sure. But I think now it's proven just how good Georgie boy is, and he's picking up that taking that baton for sure, and Lewis is passing it on. But I still think there's more to come from Lewis this season, 100%, no question.
Who's taking the title?
You know what? It's hard to look past. I really want it to be Leclerc. I'd love Charles Leclerc to win, and I'd love Ferrari to be on top again. But Verstappen, man. Verstappen's the best driver in F1 at the minute, I think. And if Red Bull can get on top of the slight unreliability issues, they've got a bit of a glass cannon at the minute. And if they can get on top of that, I think it's probably going to be... If I had to put money on it today, on the 8th of June 2022, then I'm putting that money on Verstappen. But I hope Leclerc wins.
I'm putting money on Perez. Dark horse. Put a pound on that, you'd make a lot of money.
I mean, how cool would that be? Jos Verstappen is obviously a little bit nervous about it because he's kicking up a stink about
his boy.
He got a bit tilted, didn't he?
Yeah, but you don't want to mess with Jos Verstappen. He's an absolute mentalist. Like, he'll have you.
I've heard some stories about it. You know what? I think actually my video later today is talking about all about Sergio Perez because at Baku, he loves Baku.
Like, he does.
He's got a fantastic record at Baku. What, 2 P3s, a win. I think he got a P6 and then a DNF. There's been what? Yeah, that's the 4 races that he's...
Him and Vettel have one of the best records around there. Vettel's finished in the top 4 in every single race.
Exactly. And so I think that, you know, don't get me wrong, I still think, you know, over the course of the season, Max is going to have the legs for sure. It's nice for Sergio that I think that, you know, with these cars where they aren't as pointy, and again, Max isn't carrying that car confidence and car knowledge, that Sergio is able to give a more accurate and reflective account of himself as a driver relative to Max. Because I don't think he's as good as Max. No, not at all. But like, Sergio Perez is still an incredible racing driver.
He's Let's get it
twisted.
This is what I love about Formula One, though, right? It's not just about the on-track. It's the stories and the arcs it's created. Like Sergio Perez, 2 years ago, was being shown the door. Yeah. And then the win in Bahrain, and then suddenly now he's at Red Bull and he's winning in Monaco. Like, it's just, what a story.
Yeah.
Like, you don't get that in many other sports.
He just stepped up massively, didn't he, as well? Like, as soon as that announcement came, he just switched on the afterburners and just absolutely carved it up for the rest of that season. I mean, you've got to say, like, 2020, you know, driver of the year probably.
Yeah.
Like, up there for easy, for sure, up there. No question. Although, you know, Daniel Ricciardo was also up there, and we know how things fell off. It's so interesting.
And now he's on the brink of being shown the door, apparently.
Listen, that's the thing. They both had an incredible... This is 2 years ago. This is not even 2 years ago. They both have these incredible seasons, and they're both like the same age, pretty much, yet their trajectories have just gone in totally different directions, and it's crazy how quickly things can change.
It's mental. It feels like the writing's slightly on the wall for Daniel, unfortunately, but we'll see where he ends up. But Sergio, I agree, absolute class driver, and quick, but also barely puts a mark on his tyres. I mean, he's the tyre whisperer.
He's always had that.
It's incredible. You mentioned Drive to Survive. Let's touch on it. Like it or loathe it, are you a fan of the show?
I like it. I think it's good. Honestly, like, again, one of those things, I think a lot of the complaints, right? So say, for example, I go downstairs, switch on the telly, put on Question Time, or, well, not Question Time because Seb's on it, but one without Seb on it. And I'm like, oh, is that a good example? Okay, I put on, like, I don't know, Wacker Grove or some old kids' TV show, right? And I'm like, well, I'm not enjoying this. But it's not for me. You know what I mean? It's not, I think the problem that a lot of people have with Drive to Survive is that they're evaluating it based on, you know, it being for them. But I think Drive to Survive is first and foremost catered to showcasing F1. It's almost like a tutorial in a way, in some ways. That's why you get all the Will Buxton memes about, oh, if you've crossed the finish line first, you win the race. Like, it's trying to package what is a very complicated and nuanced sport in a way that it makes it accessible to new people coming in. And it also gives a little bit of extra insight, because they do get insight that, you know, the other cameras don't get, which I find super interesting. Like, you see the behind the scenes stuff, but I think any fan will find, like, you know, the Fox Smash Door memes, like, that would be, they're great memes that wouldn't exist without Drive to Survive or Valtteri Bottas's ass. Like, we don't get to see these things. You know, as much as I'd love to have the poster on my wall, I don't. And I just think, it's great at what it does. I think it achieves what it does really well. I know people complain about the edited and put in, but I'm not looking for a season review. Like, if I was looking for a season review and accurate, then I would criticize that. But what it's doing, like, I don't think it's being inherently dishonest. I just think it's using the edit to, you know, more like dial up with the message so it's as clear as possible to the target audience. And I don't have a problem with that. Like people complain about, they put, you know, Lando saying one thing over a clip of him doing something else. I'm like, I don't care. I just don't care. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because that's not what the show's meant to be.
It's to bring in new fans,
which
isn't
is done.
It, into
which
the sport. And you know, I've got so many mates now who before I was the only one in my kind of friendship group who even kind of cared about Formula One. Now, you know, especially a lot of my girl mates are so invested now. Yeah, they don't watch every race, but they know a hell of a lot more than they would ever have done before watching Drive to Survive. So as far as I'm concerned, that's job done. And I think, yes, if you're a diehard F1 fan, maybe it's not, you know, the program for you, because you're going to know that, well, why are they sort of making this kind of rivalry between Norris and Verstappen? It's not really there when you see it on the track, but, you know, there is a rivalry between all the drivers, and it's there to, as I say, create a show and bring an audience in, which, you look at the numbers, it's done that and more.
Well, from a commercial standpoint, it's been amazing, and it's opened up the States. It's opened up North America to Formula One, and you know, it's no coincidence that we now have two, nearly three races in the United States. It's been a phenomenon. Now, listen, Tom, we've kept you for almost long enough now. We're quickly running out of time, but we do have a final three questions which we're going to fire your way. They're brought to us by our friends at F1 Experiences. Harry, do you want to kick off this week?
Yes, Tomo, what has got you excited at the moment?
In F1?
In whatever aspect of life you choose.
Marriage.
You know, I mean that's the default answer, isn't it? It has to be getting married. Obviously, in real life, I'm going to be at the Canadian Grand Prix.
Is it an F1-themed wedding?
Come
down the aisle going,
yeah, I've got a checkered suit. It's all black and white.
Yes.
Helmet.
Tom Bellingham from WTF1, I think, got married, and he had like an old F1 car show up and get pictures with it.
He did. No, I'm not quite going. I mean, we're getting married in the mountains, so I don't think I'm gonna be able to get the car up onto the
snow chains on.
Canadian Grand Prix is going to be fun. And then 2 days later, I'm getting married, so I'm pretty excited for that. In F1, Yuki Tsunoda's got to be excited at the minute because I think he's doing a really good job this year, actually. Yes. I think he's kind of going under the radar.
He is going under the radar. Yeah, isn't he? He's sort of quietly getting on with business. Good answer. Number two, how much of your success is down to luck and right place, right time, and how much do you put down to other things?
I would say I think it's a 50-50. I really do. I know it's a bit of a cop-out answer, but you need to make stuff that people want to watch first and foremost. Like, that's ultimately, and that's not easy. That takes time to work out how to write scripts, how to present, blah, 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 all this stuff. But then you also have to, you put it out into the ecosphere, and there's only so much you can do to control who watches it and how many people are shown it. So honestly, like, I think it's 50-50 because, again, not even just the algorithm, like just in life, there were so many potential barriers and obstacles and things that if I'd made a slightly different decision at one time, the whole course of my career would be completely different. So I'm going to say, if anything, 60-40 in terms of luck being slightly bigger, actually.
Okay. Interesting. Final question for you, though. What are you scared of?
I am scared of, I'm terrified of cockroaches.
Oh yeah,
that's
gross.
It's like an actual
have you come across
phobia-esque. I remember this was when I was a kid. I was in Australia and we were at a zoo and I saw one, and it was like behind glass, but I saw a huge one. That shit me up. And then I went to Ibiza. This was years ago, and it was the last night there. I was sat down for dinner, and I just saw in the corner of my eye, about like 6 foot away, this huge cockroach, and I was literally paralyzed. Like, it was, I've honestly never experienced
that. How big? How big are we talking?
Like, we're talking, I would say, probably, I don't know, like, I'd say that long.
The size of your face.
Yeah, pretty much. From, I mean, I've got a big face as well. Yeah. So
it's nothing, there's a lot of face. It's nothing compared to Matty from WTF1. I mean, that face is unreal.
He's a beautiful man, he is. But yeah, I'm terrified of cockroaches, so please,
you can't kill them. They're so hard to kill. They're like this indestructible, horrible creature.
It just makes me cringe just thinking about them. Can we move on, please?
You wouldn't be good on, you wouldn't be good in I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of It.
Oh, like God, that would, you know what? Like, if you could just delete cockroaches, I'd probably be up. Like, spiders, I don't love, but I don't hate them either. Like, any snakes, whatever, cool, fine. But yeah, cockroaches, nah.
If they were human sized, they'd rule the earth.
Don't even start, please. Yeah. Don't.
Well, listen, Tomo.
On that note, it's been
a pleasure having you on. Thank you for jumping in last minute. I mean, like I said to you on text, who needs Lucas Degrassi anyway? You know, whatever, Lucas. We've got Tomo F1, so you know you can do one. Quite frankly, it's been a pleasure.
F1.
It's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for joining us and telling us about your life and career and your thoughts. It's been fascinating stuff. Good luck with the channel. Hope it continues to grow and you get all the success you deserve. Good luck for the wedding, most importantly.
Thank you.
All the best to you.
Thank you.
This finger
will be slightly heavier soon.
Claimed. And we'll see you for the karting on 4th of August, hopefully.
Amazing.
And there are teams still available. Motormouthkartrace.com. Go and book your team of four and maybe you can race alongside Tom McCluskey. Tom, for now, thank you so much for joining us on the Motormouth podcast.
Cheers for having me, boys. Pleasure. Thank you very much.
If you've been listening to this and thinking, actually, I really want to go and experience a race for myself in person, why not do it in style at a Formula One Grand Prix thanks to F1 Experiences, the official experience, hospitality and travel program of Formula One. F1 Experiences really is the closest you can get to the sport. Official ticket packages which include the best race tickets, first class hotels, travel and exclusive behind the scenes access across a Grand Prix weekend, F1 Experiences offer packages like no other. So, To book your F1 Experiences package, head online to f1experiences.com, and if you enter code MM11F1E, you'll get 5% off too. Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth _, Instagram at Motormouth _official, and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can also download the Motormouth app, where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile to interact with other fans, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. We're also proud to be supporting the Brain Tumor Charity too, so make sure you check the links in the podcast description to find out how you can help cure brain tumors quicker. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and review, and until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.